You're listening to TASH Amplified, a podcast that seeks to transform research and experience concerning inclusion and equity for people with disabilities into solutions people can use in their everyday lives. Today's episode is the last in a three-part preview of TASH's upcoming conference, Faith and Flourishing, Embracing Inclusion for People with Disabilities, Their Families, and Congregations, to be held this Friday, April 22nd in Nashville, Tennessee. We're talking with Bill Gaventa about how faith communities can be welcoming to people with disabilities. Bill Gaventa is the director of the Summer Institute on Theology and Disability. From 1995 to 2003, he was a professor at the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School in New Jersey, where he served as director of community and congregational supports at the Elizabeth M. Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities. Bill Gaventa, please introduce yourself for our listeners.
Thanks, Don. I'm a clergyman, ordained American Baptist many years ago now, who has spent most of my, in fact, all of my career working in the area of intellectual and developmental disabilities. I sometimes call myself a deinstitutionalized chaplain, partly because I got started in this in one of the early university-affiliated programs or facilities where I was a chaplaincy trainee. But then my first real job was at one of the large old hellhole institutions in upstate New York, Newark State School, where I became the Protestant chaplain, and then moved to a smaller facility in Rochester Monroe Developmental Center, where my role became bridging between the center and faith communities, and then have been in a number of other positions since, one with the Georgia DD Council, and then a longest one with the Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities in New Jersey, where I did work on inclusive faith supports, but also in areas like community building, cultural competence, self-direction, grief and loss, and community-based training for direct support professionals. So I wore hats on both the religious side and the secular side, so to speak. And now I currently live in Waco, Texas, where we moved 3 years ago for my wife's job, who's got a nice job at Baylor, and I'm working now as the director of the Summer Institute on Theology and Disability and coordinating some other national projects in faith and disability.
Tell us about the work that you and the Summer Institute on Theology and Disability do regarding faith and people with disabilities.
The Summer Institute began 6 years ago. Our seventh is this May, at the end of May, in Michigan this year. It moves around. It's an institute that brings together people from many different backgrounds, both faith backgrounds, but also roles, academics, clergy, people who are working in faith-based services and supports, people with disabilities who are receivers of services and supports, but also professionals, some of them become family members, anybody who's interested in this intersection of religion and disability or the numbers of intersections that are there. And the idea is really to be a place where we can work together on both the theoretical underpinnings and theological underpinnings of our work, as well as state-of-the-art issues and strategies for practice and for ministry and for putting, putting principle and theory into action and then learning from that action. We have about 150 people who come each year, and it's gotten to be a very a real crucible of ideas and experiences.
Can you preview for us a little bit of what you'll be talking about at the Faith and Flourishing Conference?
Sure. The title of my talk to the whole group is called Hidden in Plain Sight: Strategies for Welcoming People with Disabilities into Congregational Settings. And what I mean by that is that sometimes faith communities and churches, synagogues, and others think that they have to do all kinds of special things in order to welcome or include people with disabilities in their families. It may be seem very new to them because they haven't done it before. It may feel risky. Sometimes you hear churches asking the liability question because that's really a measure of saying, we're not sure what to do here. But in fact, most of the strategies for welcoming and including people are ones that they do with everyone else and just don't think about it. And don't think about doing those same things with people with disabilities in their families. Or, on the other hand, there are things that they do that they haven't thought about that are possible barriers to people being included and need to be thought about and explored in ways to help make their faith communities more welcome. For example, in the autism world, we talk about the hidden curriculum in a classroom or a community or social setting. What are the rules? What are the expectations? And every different faith community has their own hidden curriculum of what people's expectations are, what you're supposed to do when and where. And we usually just take those for granted. But to help people feel comfortable and welcome, perhaps there are, with some people, we need to help them be more explicit about expectations and what people do.
Why is it important for people to consider faith when dealing with disability rights and inclusion?
My first response would be that we're all spiritual people in one way or another, that spirituality is part of every human being. They may live or act that out or think about it in different ways. But for many people, participating in a particular faith tradition or a congregation or is a primary way in which their spirituality has been formed and developed and lived out. If that's an important part of their lives, and the more we know about what we think disability is, we know that it's personal and social constructs around what a disability is, and spirituality, values, beliefs shape those constructs, both for individuals and for communities, then I think it can be an important resource for people individually. It can be an important way of helping communities and congregations be welcoming places that help people have a sense of belonging, not only there, but to the wider community, and can be a place where people live out their own spiritual gifts and needs and interests in ways that other people do. It doesn't always have to be in a context of faith. People talk these days about the difference between spirituality and religion. One can talk in that framework, but I think that for many people in this country, their spirituality is connected to communities of faith.
What do churches and families need to do to promote inclusion in faith communities for people with disabilities?
Churches, first of all, need to be intentional about how they welcome and receive people who have disabilities or their family members. It used to be that if you ask congregations, how do you support people with disabilities in your congregations, they would say, well, we don't have any here. And yet, statistically, that would not be right, given the numbers and percentages of people with disabilities. But it may be part of their tradition, or they weren't thinking about who was actually in some of the families or some of their membership. For instance, when you can talk about disabilities these days as, for many elderly people, as acquired disabilities. And for years, congregations, for instance, in the South, where I grew up, would talk about people who are shut-ins. And one might then begin to ask, well, why are they shut in? Are they shut in because they can't get into the church or to a synagogue or to a parish because of accessibility issues? Or are they shut in because there's an assumption about a child's behavior, that he or she couldn't be included in Sunday school. So that I think congregations need to think this through and think through who their members are and who are connected to those families. They also, most faith communities also say everybody's welcome. And they need to, a lot of people are doing intentional thinking these days about what hospitality means. In some faith communities, there's a lot of talk about what radical hospitality means, and that's a conversation that started even without reference to disability, but welcoming people from diverse backgrounds and with diverse kinds of needs and strengths. So congregations need to be intentional and, I think, planful about how they welcome and include. And then families, on the other hand, I hope will be willing to ask and willing to knock on the doors of churches, synagogues, parishes, and say, we'd like to come, or we're coming, and can we talk to you about what our family member, our child, our son, daughter, parent, brother or sister might need to be able to be included in this faith, in this community. I think one of the biggest, I think there's a lot going on now in congregations around the country around addressing issues of inclusion and disability, certainly much more than 20 years ago, just much, much more. And there are lots of resources. And so one of the things that families can do when they are approaching a congregation is to find out about some of those resources and to find and to know that there are people out there doing the kinds of things that they're interested in having done at their own particular faith community. We can talk about inclusive ministry and inclusive spirituality and inclusive congregations in general, but people belong to and go to and visit and are part of specific and particular congregations. And so it's something you can think about on a global level, but the challenge is asking and working on it in particular. I would add to that that over the years, I think many people with disabilities and their family members have not had good experiences with faith communities in terms of being welcomed. Or if a child was born into a family and as that child older, things happened that caused a breach, people felt wounded in some way or neglected or something was said, and it's led to any number of people sort of giving up on church. And I think it's one of the next waves and motivations behind inclusive ministries will be when churches are ready to hear those stories, people who've had bad experiences in the past, and to listen to the anger or the hurt that may be there, but also when families are willing to go to recognize that things are changing and to go try again.
Is there anything churches should know about adapting their education programs for people with intellectual disabilities?
Yeah, they should know the same things that, schools do. And how do you, some of the best strategies for inclusion and including people. And they are learning from special ed as well as and sort of state-of-the-art special ed strategies or inclusive education strategies. And those can be things like, having a best buddy or a little bit a buddy who or a peer who's a mentor to participate with another kid. It can be learning how to adapt some of the curriculum. It can be thinking about universal design in Sunday school classrooms as well as in other classrooms. The kinds of things you might have to do to help a kid with an intellectual disability be more included more successfully can turn out to be things that all the kids will enjoy. And just like it does in the world of special ed, that what you have to do for a kid with intellectual disabilities may lead to something that's that may lead into strategies or practices that everybody enjoys, like changing up the kinds of activities, helping people move around, learn not just by sitting and listening, doing crafts, artwork, and music, and a variety of kinds of learning. We often get caught in thinking that Sunday school or religious education, what's important is about what you learn conceptually about the Bible or about God or your faith tradition. And while that is important, the more important part, I think, for me is how those classrooms and experiences help to develop and form people in their own spirituality. You learn by being part of a community where other adults than your parents care for you, and where you have peers and people who think together about what it means to be a person of faith and how we treat one another and who God is for you and how we worship and sing and care for others together. So it's that experience of participation and shaping that is crucial. And thinking about it that way, it's not so much a question of equating faith with reason and what you, quote, understand or how much you know about some of the more abstract or intellectual dimensions of faith.
Is there anything that churches need to do to help people who might have sensory processing issues participate in worship?
Depends upon what those issues are. And the important thing is to address inclusion one by one with people. It's to help congregations think not about, oh, we should do all these kinds of things, but who's right in front of us and what do they need? And what they've indicated a desire to come, how can we help facilitate that? And if that means, for instance, I've heard of congregations, for instance, working with kids on the autism spectrum, for whom it became very important that child be able to sit right in the front so there wouldn't be all these other heads in between them and what was going on in front of them or where the preacher was and the choir was. So those are, I think, it, again, one by one, but we know that as you work on those different strategies of either behavior or sight or hearing, that there are things there that then help faith communities to be more aware of the way that we all use our senses in being part of a worshiping community. And maybe there then are ways to that we can be use those more intentionally in ways that include people so it speaks to people at a variety of different levels, not just at what I would sometimes call this the heard and the spoken and sitting down word, but by other kinds of senses as well.
Well, thank you for taking time to share with us the work that you do and to preview your Faith and Flourishing workshop.
Well, we look forward to it. The other part that we're going to be doing is a workshop on one of the exciting projects that's been going on in Nashville and in some other places around the country, is looking at the role of congregations in helping people with disabilities to find jobs. We've been part of a Putting Faith to Work project that works on using the social capital of congregations to help people with disabilities find jobs. Most of us get jobs through who we know and our connections, and we think this is a resource that hadn't been tapped very well across the country and one that has some real promise for helping people to do something about the unemployment statistics for people with disabilities.
That's great. Transition is an issue where there's a lot of work that remains to be done. I'm glad you're thinking about that.
Well, Faith Communities is about not just what happens on Sunday, as our host Eric Carter in Nashville would say, and the coordinator of this conference, but it's with Tash, it's about the other 6 days of the week. And if you think about people's having a sense of calling and wanting to contribute and be a giver as well as receiver, then most of us do that through, we try to live out our faith through our work and sense of purpose and making contribution. And people with disabilities need that opportunity just as much as anybody else does.
Terrific. We'll talk to you again on April 22nd.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to TASH Amplified. For more about the series, including show notes, links to articles discussed, a complete transcript, and a schedule of episodes updated as they become available, visit tash.org/amplified. You can subscribe through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app to have the series delivered automatically to your device so you never miss an episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a rating for us on our iTunes page. Our three-part series in anticipation of our Faith and Flourishing conference started 2 weeks ago with Peter McKechnie on how to start a ministry for people with disabilities. Last week's part two was with Amy Fenton Lee on how to include children with disabilities in their families. You can learn more about these three workshops featured in Amplified, plus the 11 additional workshops of the full Faith and Flourishing conference, and register to attend at tash.org/Nashville. TASH thanks the following partners for their sponsorship of the Faith and Flourishing Conference: the Vanderbilt University Kennedy Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, Anthem, the Down Syndrome Association of Middle Tennessee, the Tennessee Council on Developmental Disabilities, and SERVES. TASH is a values and research-based advocacy association located in Washington, D.C., with local chapters covering 18 states. In 2015, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. We offer organization, advocacy, collaboration, scholarship, and education for people with disabilities, researchers, educators, service providers, and family members. In addition to this podcast series, we offer a scholarly quarterly, Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities, a popular magazine, Connections, a series of regional conferences, including Faith and Flourishing, and our annual conference. You can learn more about TASH at tash.org. You can receive updates from TASH on this podcast and our other activities by following us on Facebook or on Twitter at TASHTweet. This has been a sample of the colleagues and conversations available through TASH. It is only because of the excellent work that our members do that we can bring you this information. For more resources such as this and to become a member, visit tash.org/join. We'll hear from another outstanding advocate again in 2 weeks.